It is not official yet. We assume that's a formality once a physical is passed. And once that is done, Buck, and it does become official, it sounds like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to be a Blue Jay for his entire career.
And he should be.
It's At the Letters, presented by MLB The Show 25 for Monday, April 7th, 2025. Arden Zwelling here with Ben Uxton-Smith. Our producer is Christian Ryan. Thank you all so much for listening. Ben, there is one and only one place where we can begin this edition of At the Letters, and that is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. signing an extension with the Toronto Blue Jays for $500 million over 14 years, the second largest contract in MLB history, by far the largest contract, obviously, in Blue Jays history. It will begin next season. It will run through Vlad's age 40 season in a totally like conceptual year numbered 2039 that I'm not entirely convinced that we will ever see. How are you feeling in the wake of this announcement?
This is a big one. This is huge. Anyone who has listened to our podcast knows that this has been a massive discussion around the team and here on At the Letters. So much to dive into here. So many angles to look at this from. Big picture, I think this is great. I think this is great for the Blue Jays to have a core offensive player, a potential Hall of Fame caliber player, an all-star and MVP candidate in Toronto for his prime. And, you know, 14 years, that's a long time. Second half of that deal might not look amazing, but the first half actually could look amazing. And they have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to build around. This is a big deal. I mean, literally, it's a big deal. It's the second biggest in Major League Baseball history, but it matters a lot to this franchise to have Vlad Jr. Obviously, they have work to do. Obviously, one player only gets you so far, but I still think that this is a very positive development. And as someone who said that, you know, I thought the Blue Jays had made a mistake in spring by not signing Vladdy to a $500 million extension if that opportunity was there. And now I'm sitting here looking at this deal, and I think it's a good one. I think that they made the right call in getting that done.
Okay, I will compartmentalize this into three categories. Category number one is Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who this is a great deal for, obviously. For 500 million reasons, it's a great deal. It's great for any player to secure their bag. It's funny, like players, they get paid just like the rest of us. They get a direct deposit every 2 weeks, and they get paid over like the six months of the MLB regular season. They don't get paid in spring training. They don't get paid in the playoffs, although they do get a postseason share at the end of it, but they don't get paid on like a normal schedule. So you've got like the 6 months of the regular season where they're just getting a direct deposit every 2 weeks, and they get like a pay stub. And Vladdy's, when this all begins, assuming that everything is dispersed just like at $35.7 million over each of the 14 years, every 2 weeks he's going to get a pay stub with a gross pay of like $2.7 million every 2 weeks. So that's pretty cool. Good for him. Great for him. For Blue Jays fans, great. Good. Fantastic. Blue Jays fans needed a win. Ever since Bo Bichette and George Springer collided with one another in shallow center field at the Rogers Center a couple of years ago, it has been just like kick to the groin after kick to the groin with just everything that has happened with this team and just how public many of the near misses, many of the pursuits have been. So for Blue Jays fans to have like their homegrown star commit to sticking around for the rest of his career, who could be potentially like the rare one team player. This is going to be the club's choice. You know, there's always possible that towards the end of this, there's like a DFA and he goes, plays 1 or 2 years with some other organization, or there's a trade or whatever.
You're already talking DFA. Oh,
it's possible.
Man.
Yeah. It's possible. But, you know, Joey Votto didn't finish his career with the Cincinnati Reds. He finished his career with the Buffalo Bisons. But look, it's very rare in today's game that you see a player go like post to post of one team. And it's possible Vlad could do that in Toronto. That's really, really special. And for fans, like, you just, there's zero hesitation now to like buy his jersey. You know, like there's zero reason to think, oh, like, are the Blue Jays going to have this pivot towards the end of 2025? And are they going to go into a rebuild? Like, nope, that's all off the table. Vlad's going to be in Toronto. The Blue Jays are going to be trying to be good. They're going to be spending a ton of money. That's great for them. I feel like I should shut up now, but my third stakeholder, and I'm sure we're going to get into this a lot, is the Blue Jays. And will this be great? Will this be fantastic for the Blue Jays? I just think it's impossible to answer that question today.
Yeah, that I think is inherent to any deal this long and to any deal this big. There are a lot of things about 2039 that we can't predict and honestly shouldn't try to predict. So it's, I think, definitely fair to say that we don't know how it's going to end. And if the Blue Jays continue sputtering out and having these disappointments that you alluded to in the course of these next, let's say, 6, 7, 8 years, you know, the years that we would expect to be Vlad Guerrero Jr.'s prime, if they don't take advantage of that, then of course this will be a bad deal. Like, of course, the back half of it, it's not going to look that great. It's not going to be quote unquote efficient. But what you're doing with this deal is you're buying yourself 6, 7, 8 chances with Vlad Jr. being in his prime that you wouldn't have otherwise had. And this is a player who is so, so young. We've talked about this a lot, but it bears repeating for any new listeners or for anyone who was zoning out at the time. Like, he's 26 years old. He is younger than the reigning rookie of the year. He's an incredibly young player with so much of his future ahead of him that even the next 7 years, like if you buy a standard free agent and he's 31 years old, that player might get a 7-year deal. You're probably getting 3 good ones, kind of like George Springer, 3 good ones and 3, you know, we'll see. But this deal, 14 years, you might get 7 good ones. So there's a huge amount of opportunity for them to build around him, to take advantage of it. They have literally extended the window where he can be a cornerstone piece of this team. Clearly, it has to be more than Vlad Jr. The Angels have shown us that with Trout and Ohtani. That goes without saying, I would hope. But this is a really good start. And their 2026 offense looks a lot better today than it did 24 hours ago.
Yeah, I could paint like 3 scenarios for you that I think are all entirely feasible. There's like an upside scenario where Vlad finally achieves offensive consistency in his, you know, towards his late 20s, like as he matures and really figures out what he needs to do to be at his best consistently at this level. And he's this, it's like the Bryce Harper arc. He becomes this, you know, perennial MVP candidate. And Bryce Harper hasn't done this yet, but, you know, say Vlad helps the Blue Jays win a couple championships and he just has this amazing career peak and, you know, he goes into the Hall of Fame and the Blue Jays raise banners. And that's like the total upside scenario. There's like a middle ground scenario where, say, he trades off some like great MVP worthy years with like some merely good ones. Say he has like 1 lost season mixed in there due to injury and trying to play through that injury and underperforming. And, you know, the Blue Jays go to the ALCS a couple times in there, like say they reach a World Series and they're competitive. Maybe they win it, maybe they don't. And then he has this like typical gradual decline beginning at like 33, 34. That's like the middle ground scenario. And then there's a downside scenario in which he continues performing inconsistently as he has been offensively, and he continues struggling in the postseason as he has, and he continues to come up short in some incredibly big spots as we've seen. And there's like knee and wrist wear and tear that start to crop up towards his late 20s, and that leads to substantial missed time on the IL, and that makes it harder for him to generate power at the plate, and he can't contribute defensively as much, and he's missing a lot of time with injuries, and this deal like backfires massively. I could feasibly see that upside, that middle ground, and that downside scenario playing out. Like, I think those are all on the table.
That's all fair. I think that's all definitely within the realm here of where this thing could go. Obviously, the Jays hoping for the first one, and you know, I think that hope is great for fans. Clearly, the front office has to look at this through the prism of what is a fair, reasonable recommendation to make to ownership as far as what's likely to occur here. And I actually think, and you can look at this at sportsnet.ca where I mapped some of this out, but I actually think that if you're looking at the middle scenario that you described, then this can still be a very effective, fair deal, which it's kind of wild because it is the second biggest contract in the history of Major League Baseball. But, and Vladdy is a first baseman. We understand he's not Bobby Witt Jr. out there playing a Gold Glove shortstop. But if he can just, and this is where it all comes down to the youth. It's all about the youth. But the first 7 years of this deal take him through age 33. Like, 33 is not old. 33, even in baseball years, 33 is like, you're still pretty productive at that point. And then the second half, 34 through 40, yeah, it's probably not going to be as great. But that could be the legacy years. Those could be the years where by then you have a new core surrounding Vlad Jr. And he's kind of the old statesman on the team who's hitting some big home runs and coming up with some big swings. But by then, and this is 7-8 years from now, of course, the Jays have to have developed a new core by then. They have to have a whole new group of players surrounding him if they want to be relevant. But this first 7 years, even if you start him at 5 WAR and you scale him to like 3.5 WAR by 2032 when he's 33 years old, that's like a middle ground. We're not talking like 8 WAR seasons here. It's just 3.5 to 5 WAR. If he's in that range, then this can still be a fair value deal for the Blue Jays. I do think it's a fair, it's clearly a win for Vlad, but I think it's a fair deal for everyone involved.
What I think you're looking for is you're looking for the Miguel Cabrera arc to play out, essentially, because Miguel Cabrera with the Tigers from his age 27 season through his age 33 season was like the guy you're describing, like 7 years of just all-star silver slugger MVP candidate production. He won a couple MVP awards in there. He put up just around 44 wins above replacement over those 7 years. And I think you're targeting that like 40 barrier with Vlad. You want like 40 wins from him over the first 7 years of this deal.
Honestly, I think if you get 40 over the whole contract, then you're probably fine.
Well, I think you want to go over 40 because you're going to have a negative number over the final 5, 6, 7, as I will demonstrate here, because with Miggy, he had around 44 over the first, like, you know, over the 7 years from age 27 through age 33. And then things dropped off in a big way from age 34 through age 40 when he was worth negative 2 and a bit. WAR. So he was sub replacement level for the final 7 years of that deal. And like, it's just a stark cutoff with his career where over the first seven, it's like a 165 WRC plus. And then over the next seven, it's like a 95. And over the first seven, he's averaging 150 plus games per year. And over the latter seven, he's averaging around 100. So I think that would be a good outcome, honestly, if the Blue Jays get that. Like, I think you're looking to cross that 40 WAR threshold, like over the 14 years of this career, but like, you need those 40 essentially to come in the first seven, and hopefully to actually go beyond 40 to like 44 or 45 so that you have a bit of room to sort of decline and regress back towards 40, because as you've said, the final 5, 6, 7 years of this deal just are not going to look good.
Right. And you know, to be fair, I actually think that like year 9, year 10, he's 35, he's 36. I think he can still be a useful player. The last four, yeah, that might be where you cross into that, you know, territory. You're not getting a whole lot in return. But not everyone has the same precipitous decline that Miguel Cabrera had. You could look at someone like a Paul Goldschmidt, where it's been more measured. Even Albert Pujols, like, he fell off badly at the very end. But Albert Pujols at 33, 34, there were some good seasons in there. David Ortiz aged really, really well. So there are a lot of counterpoints, and Vladdy's going to chart his own path here. Whatever it is, you know, he's going to have to chart his own path. And for anyone who doesn't follow the WAR totals closely, I know it's not like as easily accessible as like home run totals, but 60 WAR would commonly be thought to be like a Hall of Fame threshold. If you get 60 WAR, that's like, you have a very good chance to get Hall of Fame consideration. Now he's around 21. So if he were to add 40 more, you're talking about a Hall of Famer. And end of the day, if you get a Hall of Fame player who spends 20 years with the Blue Jays and goes into Cooperstown with a Blue Jays hat on, we're never going to be calling this a bad deal. That's a franchise player. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, honestly, in our lifetimes, like for you and me, Arden, like, there haven't been Blue Jays players who have stayed with this franchise the whole time, whether it's a, you know, Joe Carter, Roberto Alomar, Devon White, Josh Donaldson, Jose Bautista, Edwin Encarnacion, Vernon Wells, Roy Halladay. All those players bounce between different teams. All of them.
Dave Steeb's the guy, right?
Dave Steeb is the one guy. I guess technically he pitched in 1998, but like, basically he was pitching the 80s. I have no recollection of that. So, and we're not exactly like the youngest people around following the Blue Jays anymore. So there are a couple generations of Jays fans out there who don't have someone that they can point to that was always a Blue Jay.
Yeah, and you know, I will concede this to you that Miguel Cabrera, in his what age was it? His age 35 season was actually pretty good on a wins above replacement level. Not so much because he really like he looks like he missed a ton of time due to injuries, but he did have a 128 OPS plus. He was playing very well when he was on the field, but then he got hurt, and I think that's like the big question with Vlad over the latter half of this career. It's the big push-pull. It's just like how his body will age versus how his soft skills will age. You know, this is clearly not the body type that has historically aged very well from a durability standpoint. You know, even though right. Vlad has been incredibly durable to this point in his career, it's easy to find examples of players who are, you know, 158, 159, 160 games played every year through age 26, Prince Fielder, hello, and things go a lot differently. So right. I think it's a push-pull of like how his body ages physically versus just how the soft skills age, such as like the understanding of the strike zone and the feel for the barrel, the hit tool. Like those are all things that ought to age really well, but there is a really big question with durability with this body type.
Yeah, I think there are, and it's not my field of expertise, but I think we can certainly point to bigger dudes who succeeded and had Hall of Fame careers, whether it is Miguel Cabrera, whether it is CC Sabathia, Albert Pujols wasn't blowing over in the wind too many times. Like whether it's David Ortiz, who is a big poppy, like this is a big personality, a big person. So, you know, Vladdy's he's a big guy. And I think that the Blue Jays in making this commitment to him are making a huge investment that he can take care of himself and he can know what's best for him and find that balance point, whatever that is. Clearly early in his career, he wasn't finding that. And he wasn't in the best shape. We all know that. But then he learned from that. And it was in the major leagues. It was very public. It was very exposed. But he actually did learn from that and did develop from that. So, you know, there's a long road ahead in the course of the next 14 years. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know which way it goes. But the Blue Jays, in making this investment, are saying they believe in his ability to walk that line and the ability of their staff to help him do it.
Well, the Blue Jays front office wouldn't necessarily have made this investment if they had stuck to their valuation. So they actually believe that he wasn't worth it. It's true, though.
Well, it's as Mark Shapiro told us, he said that publicly.
Their projections include like body modeling, you know, like that includes like what's the body type and how have players with this body type historically aged and what's the injury risk going to look like as you go along. And, you know, which is like not even to mention that durability isn't always correlated to body composition. Like right. Byron Buxton is a friggin' stud, right?
Yeah.
But the guy can't stay on the field.
So true.
Right. Just as you've seen plenty of big guys who have played a ton, there are plenty of, you know, units like absolute Adonises who just get hurt all the time for one reason yeah. or another. So like it's not necessarily correlated. And like I think that Blue Jays ownership made that investment that you're talking about. Like I think the Blue Jays ownership was very willing to go to $500 million. But Mark Shapiro has told us that when the Blue Jays were at 450, they had already exceeded their objective rational valuation, what their projections were telling them with, by the way, as Mark has often said, factoring in fan sentiment, factoring in the subjective things that you know about the player, factoring in what he means to the market and to the franchise, yada, 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 that they were already beyond that at 450. So they're now well beyond that at 500. So it's entirely possible that within the Blue Jays front office, if you gave them the truth serum, they tell you, yeah, you know, like at 35, Vlad might play 38 games like Miguel Cabrera did. And at 37, yeah. he might play 57 games like Miguel Cabrera did. Like this might happen.
Yeah, that's a great point. And in a way, we don't even have to give Mark Shapiro the truth serum because he already told us on the record what that valuation was.
We appreciate your candor.
Yeah. And look, I will say in all of this, it is actions that matter more than words. So I will say, end of the day, Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins were part of the process, presumably a big part of the process that got this done. Same with Vlad Jr. himself. He was also a big part of this and he got it done. Same with Vlad Jr.'s agents. Same with anyone who was involved. End of the day, they got this across the finish line. So, you know, were there some words that were thrown out there in the course of this process that in hindsight look kind of absurd? Yeah, like a lot of them. And this whole thing, like they got to the good point, and that's the bottom line here. And I don't want to take away anything from what could be a joyful day for Jays fans. And I hope that's the case because Jays fans deserve it. But, you know, if we're looking at this, I do also think like Vladdy's deadline, like, sorry, yeah. Vlad, it wasn't a real deadline. You were exaggerating that, which that's his right, but it wasn't entirely truthful on the part of Vlad Jr. The Blue Jays, they made their quote-unquote best and final offer and maybe stayed within their valuation or, you know, whatever the case in February. And then, oh, I guess actually we'll revise that and we'll go back and we'll do it. So, and Mark Shapiro in the fall has, you know, doesn't answer the generational player question. We can parse that. We can look at that. That's the words part of it. And words matter. And here we are on a podcast. Of course, we're going to talk about that stuff. But end of the day, it really is action. So they got it done. Vlad said he wanted to stay. He stayed. The Blue Jays said they were optimistic about getting a deal done. They got it done. So he's here. That's the important thing. But looking back, if you try to connect these dots and make sense of the comments, like, good luck, because not a lot of it makes sense.
Well, yeah, to your point, like, we're doing our jobs by examining all angles of this. Like, as a fan, if you don't want to think about the negotiation or the business case, like, that's totally fine. Like, this doesn't mean you, like, fans can't be happy about it. Fans don't need to think about what Vlad's going to look like in 2036. They don't need to be envisioning the DFA scenarios like I am, okay? Like, no one says that any fan has to care about how this fits within, like, a budget or a balance sheet or what this could mean for an owner that has accumulated more wealth than any of us can even comprehend. Like, and even from a front office standpoint, like, there's no rule that you have to only sign contracts that project to provide surplus value. You don't only have to sign contracts that, like, reflect historical precedent, right, and are based in sound fiscal fundamentals. Like, you're allowed to overpay. Like, that's, yeah, there's no rules against it. Like, look at Steve Cohen, right? Like, you're allowed to have an inefficient payroll. You're allowed to take a value loss on one player and try to gain that value back on, like, an Arjun Namala or a Treyus Savage or a, you know, undrafted player that's, like, at the IMG Academy, some 16-year-old with pimples right now. But, you know, we do have to admit this is a substantial risk for the Blue Jays, and it does feel like this is a contract that, if it was just the front office making this decision based upon their objective projections and their modeling and their fundamentals and their values, that is would be even just beyond what they would have considered an uncomfortable territory coming into this.
That's right. And I think, like, I haven't had the chance to survey as many executives as hopefully I will get to as, you know, the time passes and I have a chance to do some of this stuff. But in talking to people around the game this spring, as these talks were unfolding or maybe stopped or maybe about to unfold, it was clear to me that people in baseball look at $500 million for a first baseman, and there is something about that that just they don't want to do it. On the team side, there is a lot of hesitation there to do it for any player, but especially for a first baseman. Fair enough. Those people are employed to make these kind of decisions. That's fair enough. And that includes people within the Blue Jays organization who have, you know, some of those thoughts, and that's their job, and I get it. My counter to that being that I just think Vlad's position is hitter. And I think that the same can be said for Juan Soto, who's not going to be winning a lot of gold gloves in Queens, but he's just that good of a hitter. So it's a huge, huge bet. And with that, there is risk and there is downside, but there is also upside and there is also reward. And as a big market team, the Jays can afford to play in these waters.
No, and I'm sure you talk to people from other organizations within the game who are sympathetic to the Blue Jays holding strong this spring and saying, no, we're not going to go to $500 million.
Right.
Right.
Right. And let me ask you about that, because we talked about that a couple times where this was maybe after the negotiations had stopped and there were the reports coming out. And I think at the time you were saying, like, hey, if the Blue Jays go over 475, they might kind of lose their credibility in negotiations. So how do you view that now that we're seeing this actual deal?
I mean, I think it undermines the next time that they say last and best.
Yeah.
Truly. And I think it's a great job by Vlad's side in not budging at all and by utilizing their leverage thoroughly. I mean, their side, they held firm. They forced the Jays into an uncomfortable position and they got what they wanted. Like, they forced the Jays to cave, you know? Like, I would have advised Vlad to take the 450.
Same, you know? Same here.
I would have said, hey, man, like, you know, we got to the end of this process. The spring training is about to start. Regular season is about to start. Who knows what's going to happen? We don't know what the market's going to look like come fall and winter. $450 million is a lot of million bucks. Like, you want to be in Toronto? Good enough. This is where the negotiation played out to. But like, I would have been wrong. And he was right not to take it. His side was right to have the stones to turn that down and to hold firm and to force the Blue Jays to come up to $500 million. Like, it was a really good negotiation by Vlad's side. They utilized their leverage very effectively.
Yeah, they had a lot more of it than the Blue Jays did, and they really used it, because exactly like you, I and you can go back and listen, I said at the time, I would have told Vladdy to take that deal. If it was 440, 450, I would have said, yeah, take it. And now he's $50 or $60 million richer. So good job by him to get that. And, you know, as we had speculated at that time or shortly afterwards, you know, this was a deal where Vladdy didn't want to budge. And my impression at the time was that the Blue Jays didn't want to budge either, but Vladdy really didn't budge. And then he didn't have to, because this, and the reason he didn't have to, for anyone wondering why, okay, there are a couple actual things that I do want to clarify here, but the reason that Vlad didn't have to budge is because, and you know this obviously, Arden, but for anyone listening, his skill set is so scarce. You can find hitters who maybe hit some home runs or maybe hit for an okay average or maybe can project to do this for 3 years. But for finding someone who can project to be an elite hitter for 8 years, who hits home runs and hits for average, those guys are just so, so scarce. They don't hit free agency. Vlad Jr. included, he doesn't hit free agency. So, well, there's another point I'll make, you know, in a bit here, but just, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that. Just the scarcity of how rare it is for someone like this to hit free agency.
I agree. But in the last couple of years, it has not been scarce, which is the funny thing, because yeah, Juan Soto has been a free agent and Shohei Ohtani have been a free agent, and the Blue Jays have pursued those players very aggressively. And I mean, there is a world where the Blue Jays land Shohei Ohtani or where they land Juan Soto because like Steve Cohen just changes his mind. And what would that have meant for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? I do wonder about kind of sliding doors of that if they had landed one of Soto and Ohtani, who they were offering at the time more money to than they did to Vlad. They ultimately ended up paying Vlad more than Ohtani got in net present value. But at the time, they were, you know, when they were pursuing Ohtani and Soto, they were only at the, you know, $300-ish million range, and they ended up at $500 with Vlad. So if they had come away with one of those incredibly rare, incredibly scarce players, I do wonder what that would have meant for a potential Vlad extension.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting possibility. And by the way, the Ohtani deal for him, which I think is valued at $437 by the Players Association. I've said
what
it before.
A steal.
What a steal. Honestly, this guy, yeah, he pitches and he hits. He steals. Like, obviously, everyone knows who Shohei Ohtani is. He's incredible. But what a steal. So, you know, not to, I think the Vlad deal is fair. I think the Soto deal is probably a little overpay, but hey, they got the player and they're the Mets, so who cares? I think the Shohei deal is just a bargain, like, which is just wild.
Which is crazy, and it's become that within the span of less than 2 years, which is insane. Honestly, it is a bargain. I think the true bargain is Bryce Harper at 13 years, 330 in 2019. Yeah. Remember how that played out? Like, remember that whole offseason? Nobody wanted to meet his demands. Like, no team wanted to sell. Like, he was the same thing as Vlad, right? Their careers have been remarkably similar through age 25, age 26 seasons, where they, you know, they've been somewhat inconsistent, but they've clearly shown the MVP upside, and nobody wanted to give Bryce like what he was asking for. It went into spring training, and in spring training he signs, I mean, entering his age 27 season, just as Vlad will be after this season, for 13 years, $330 million. That's a bargain for Bryce Harper, considering the way that his career has played out.
Exactly. And I think the Harper example underscores how much else the Blue Jays still have to do here. Because you look at the Phillies roster, and they also went out and got Trey Turner. They developed Alec Bohm. They signed Nick Castellanos and Kyle Schwarber, and they signed Zach Wheeler, and they traded for Lizardo, and they developed Christopher Sanchez, and they re-signed Aaron Nola and their bullpen. Like, and they haven't even won a World Series. I mean, they've been like, this is like what you have to do. And so for the Blue Jays, they know this, and I think our listeners know this too, but the Vlad Jr. extension is necessary but not sufficient to getting to the heights that they want. I think keeping him is great. I think it's a great step, but man, they have so much more to do. They have not nearly enough pitching. I'm not trying to be negative here, but it's just the reality.
No,
the Bryce Harper deal, yeah, like it's you can do something really well. Same with Ohtani. Like, look at all the other superstars the Dodgers have. So this is not like the capstone on everything. Like, hey, it's all done. We can all celebrate. Definitely enjoy it. This is definitely good, and Blue Jays fans deserve it. And there's still work to do and room to improve.
How many championships did the Tigers win with Miguel Cabrera, which we just said would be like a great outcome from this contract?
Or Joey Votto and the Reds. Yeah. And for the record, I think the Tigers and Joey Votto and like, I don't think those franchises regret that at all. And those are small market teams that didn't have the wherewithal to spend to the extent that the Blue Jays do. So this puts the Blue Jays in a good position.
The Los Angeles Angels had Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani on their roster simultaneously for multiple years. How many times did they not just win the World Series? How many times did they go to the postseason?
Right.
Zero. So like, this isn't the end of it. Like, this just locks the Blue Jays into spending more and more and more. Like, it would be a tremendous waste to pay Vlad what the Blue Jays have paid him and not surround him with a winning team. Because he can't win you a World Series on his own. We have seen that demonstrated over the last couple of years. We've seen that, like, he can have a remarkable season with a Cy Young winner also on the team, and like one of the best seasons a second baseman has ever had, and an absolutely loaded core with like a shortstop coming into his own, and Teoscar Hernandez hitting a whole bunch of bombs, and still miss the playoffs. So it's going to take so much more than just Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And when you look at like the rest of the Blue Jays roster now, like the ages, the expiring contracts, and when you look at a bottom third farm system, I think you're right to say there is a ton more work for the Blue Jays to do.
And I think part of the good news here is they should be able to continue doing it, because right now, Vlad Jr., he's in arbitration this year, but he's not cheap. He's earning $28.5 million. And the Blue Jays are still spending around him to surround him with all kinds of players who are expensive. They're running a top five payroll. This would have been really hard to imagine 20 years ago when Roy Halladay was like, you know, being traded to the Phillies. I guess that was like 16 years ago, but you get my point. Like, things have shifted in a really good direction as far as how much the Blue Jays can and do spend. Big picture, that is a huge development for this franchise and way beyond where they were 20 years ago. And Vladdy, he's making 28.5 this year. Next year, he's going to make 35.7. That's actually not a huge difference. You know, it goes up a little bit, but it's not like he's going from 10 million to 40 million. So, of course, there's still going to be room to spend around Vlad Jr. I fully expect that the Blue Jays will be motivated. They will spend. They're going to have to add pitching, obviously, this winter. So, of course, they're going to be in on every pitcher. Kyle Tucker, I mean, that probably becomes a little bit less likely. Not that I ever thought that was likely in the first place, but, you know, maybe you'll see some rumors. They'll check. They'll talk. I don't think Kyle Tucker is going to be a Blue Jay, but we'll see. But, you know, someone like Murakami, they're going to stay on Murakami, I would think. I would think that they would be very motivated on him. And one way or another, we don't know the exact names, but the track record says they will continue to spend.
No, they have to, because especially if Bo leaves, I mean, that's a ton of projected wins that are leaving. And this is not a team that even projects to make the postseason based on just like the objective projection of the wins on their roster on paper right now. And if he leaves, like, Bo's a big chunk of that, and the Blue Jays will need to replace that and then some. and add to it. So like, I think they need to continue handing out nine-figure deals. Like, I think they need to continue playing at the top of the free agent market, unless they're all of a sudden going to dramatically improve their drafting track record and they're going to do a much better job of developing pitchability internally, unless they're going to vastly improve their farm system, which, by the way, doesn't happen overnight. The Blue Jays could have like the draft of all drafts this year and we won't actually see the results of it until like 2029 or 2030. That's something that's going to take a lot of time. So like, the bill has come due for their poor drafting record over the last several seasons. They're going to have to still swing trades. They're going to have to still sign top free agents. And to your point, I mean, they can, because like, inflation is a thing. And by the end of Vlad's deal, or even towards like the early to mid 2030s, $35.7 million, like, that may only be a top 20 salary, you know, like, or a top 30 salary. The tide is going to keep rising on this as MLB revenues continue to rise, and as, you know, players continue to, you know, Vlad's, this is a new precedent, right, for first baseman. You know, like, this resets the market for players like Vlad, and for players of his position, of his ilk. This is something that is going to be precedent for a ton of negotiations in the future. So like, you think about, like, A-Rod in 2008 signs for 10 years, $275 million. Like, record-setting deal, enormous contract. That's $27.5 million a year. Like, think about how many players make $25, $27 million a season this year. I would wager 30 to 40 players make that this season. And at the time, that was, like, mind-blowing. And that was only 2008. So as time goes on, Vlad's $35 million as a proportion of Blue Jays payroll and as just a salary across the league is not going to be like as exorbitant as it may seem today.
Yes, that's a great point, and one that needs to be understood here as we talk about this. I think that there's inflation, like, you know, the price of a loaf of bread goes up. There's also baseball inflation, which is the revenues in the sport, which this is a great thing, but the revenues in the sport go up a lot. Major League Baseball is much more profitable as a business than it was in 1997 or 2008 or 2016. There's more revenue coming into the sport. A lot of that flows to the players. So the players now are richer than they were before. And I think connected to that point, but a slightly different point, is that increasingly players get paid for what they can do in the future. In years past, like, if you dial the clock back to when I was growing up following baseball, you'd see these sluggers get paid. And a lot of the time it was because what they had done. It wasn't because they were necessarily going to do it, but you had these 32, 33-year-old sluggers. They just hit a 30-homer year. Yeah, let's sign this guy to a big contract. Now, what gets you paid is what you can do in the future. This is how Yamamoto has zero pitches in the major leagues, earns $325 million as a pitcher. Like, that would never have happened before. Same with, you look at Garrett Crochet in the Red Sox. This guy is essentially 230 big league innings under his belt. Why is he getting paid to the extent that he did? He's getting paid because of what he can do in the future. And that same logic applies to Vlad Jr. Yes, he's had some great seasons, but the real reason the Blue Jays are paying him is because he projects to be and has a chance to be a great hitter going forward.
For the next 7 years, which makes these next 7 years incredibly important for the Blue Jays to leverage. Like, these next seven are going to be the most productive of Vlad's tenure with the Blue Jays, or at least we actually don't know that, but they ought to be. And the Blue Jays clearly feel like they will be. It's reasonable to expect that they will be. So the Blue Jays need to leverage that. Like, they can't waste that. They have to continue to build around him now. Like, unless the Blue Jays are going to be leaving the AL East sometime soon, which I don't really think is realistic, you know, the Orioles are still the Orioles. The Yankees are going to keep spending like the Yankees. The Red Sox are turning into a juggernaut before our eyes. And the Rays are always going to be the Rays and are always going to be extremely efficient and get like just the most possible wins out of their rosters and be very cunning and creative. So like, the Blue Jays need to build rosters capable of winning the American League East. I do not think that their current roster is capable of winning the American League East. They have Vlad locked down for the next 14 years. That's great. But the next seven are so important for the Blue Jays to continue to build around Vlad and build a contender around him. And like a lot of those pieces aren't currently in place when you consider that the starting rotation is all extremely old and extremely soon to be a free agent. And Bo Bichette is also about to hit free agency.
Yeah, I think all of that's fair. And I think this is where, if you're a Blue Jays fan, there's room to draw a lot of optimism from this for that exact reason that you just outlined, because you're not going to do this deal if behind the scenes ownership is telling you, yeah, we got to scale back. Like, we're going to bring the payroll into the 130 range. We want to be Brewers North. Like, that's, I guess the Brewers already are North, but you get what I'm saying. Yeah, like, this is clearly the kind of move that you make if you think that you can continue spending and competing. And yeah, they have work to do, and their track record in the last 18 months hasn't been great on that respect, but the direction has been chosen. And so now the path ahead is to attempt to build around Guerrero Jr., Kirk, Andrés Giménez, Anthony Santander, maybe Wagner, maybe Rodon, maybe some of these other young hitters, and whatever pitching they can find, and contend. And so that's a path ahead that just wasn't as nearly as clear even 24 hours ago.
Yeah, this is not a team friendly deal, you know? Yeah. And I agree with everything you said, but it also sort of fits like more globally into just the aspirations of Rogers with professional sports. And this is the part of the podcast where I have to remind you that Ben and I work for Sportsnet, which is owned by Rogers, just FYI. Yes. But I think you look at a lot of the maneuvers of Rogers business wise over, I don't know, the last 12 to 24 months, from, you know, whatever it was, $5 billion to buy Bell's stake in MLSE. And I think everybody sort of reasonably expects that Rogers will take on the rest of MLSE at some point from Larry Tenenbaum, whenever they, you know, have the ability to do that. So now, like, Rogers will just own all, you know, professional sports in Toronto. And then you like layer in the spending already on the Blue Jays payroll of $200+ million a year, like 250 this year, well into the luxury, you know, beyond the luxury tax threshold. You think about $300 million on the renovation of Rogers Center, maybe even more than that. You think about 150 plus on the renovation in Dunedin. Like, just in the last 7 days, we've had $500 million on Vlad and $11 billion on NHL rights. You know,
yeah.
Rogers is investing massively in professional sports, so they aren't gonna like stop here with the Blue Jays. This isn't like, all right, we're all good now. Like, a whole, like, part of the whole vision and part of the plan is to have really, really good teams that are playing deep into the postseason, creating the content that people are going to consume on various platforms that Rogers also owns, within the buildings that Rogers owns, you know, going to the concession stands and the hotels and the, you know, the bars around the corner that Rogers owns. Like, it's not hard to kind of see the vertical integration of all this and how it kind of works together. So I think that this deal, like, this gets back to the fact that, you know, Mark Shapiro has said publicly, like, yeah, this is beyond what objectively and rationally we would have done. Yeah, no kidding. Because, like, I think this is as much like an ownership Edward Rogers, Tony Staffieri level deal as it was the Blue Jays front office.
Well, certainly it would require sign off from the highest of the high in any organization when you're talking about a deal that's historic in Major League Baseball's history. And I think, to your broader point, yeah, I mean, it's the best case scenario for Rogers is the Blue Jays are highly relevant. People care about them. People spend their time and their money following them, and they win. And, you know, it's one thing to talk about that. It's another thing to do a huge investment like this. You don't have to parse it anymore. You don't have to guess. They're spending $500 million on this player, and it's clear the intention is to win. So intending to win and actually winning are two different things, and they need to get closer to the actual winning of things for this really to come full circle and have that desired effect. But I really think that this extension is a positive step for the organization. I'm happy for the Jays fans who haven't had a lot of stuff to necessarily cheer for. And I even think, when you strip away the emotion, because I've been told I've been emotional on this Vlad Jr. topic So, you know, let's strip away the emotion for a second and just look at how rare it is for hitters to succeed this much at a young age, and how rare it is for hitters to have his elite bat speed, how rare it is for hitters to have his strike zone discipline and power and combine them all. And you map that onto a chart with projected aging curves and the projected cost of a win, it looks pretty fair to me. It looks pretty reasonable to me. So it's not only that emotionally this feels like a good moment, but I actually think that rationally there is reason to believe this is a positive step for the Jays.
One last thing on Vlad, because what you're, you know, just talking about there is very much about Vlad and the rare opportunity that he presents to the Blue Jays, the rare opportunity that he presents to himself. He has now inherited a grand amount of pressure to be a franchise player. And he has inherited everything that comes with that. It is not only the production on the field where the expectations, they were already sky high, and now they have just been cemented at sky high. Like, you, if you're going to be, you know, on a $500 million deal making 37 and a half a year, like, you got to be an MVP caliber producer over the next 7 years. But it's the leadership off of it. And it is the culture setting in a clubhouse. It is the standard setting for how you go about your work. It is during the off seasons, how you're living your life. It is being involved in like any high profile free agent recruitment effort that he's asked to be involved in. Like, he needs to be all in 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, in season, off season, training, nutrition, effort, commitment, when he shows up for the bus, how he is on the plane, his media obligations, etc., etc. Like, the expectations of him and the standard that he's going to be held to has been raised now. For a long time, we've talked about Vlad is, you know, he's still very young, and he's younger than the Rookie of the Year winner, and he's still maturing. And when Aaron Judge was his age, like, he was in Double A, and yada yada. Like, this is where it changes. Like, this is where it becomes, now you have to be a culture setter, a standard setter for a franchise and for an organization. And there is a lot of pressure and expectations that come with that.
Yeah, and there should be. And I'm glad you brought the conversation there, because I meant to bring that up as well, because this is where it shifts. And when he was 20 years old and coming up to the major leagues, and there was all this hype that admittedly we contributed to as members of the media, and others certainly did their part as well, there was all this hype. Vladdy didn't necessarily choose that. That was, he chose to play baseball and to choose that as a career. But, you know, the hype that surrounded him was not something he necessarily asked for. But now, by signing this deal, he is accepting that commitment and that responsibility. And so there is a huge range here. When you look at other franchise players, even within the division, you look at Rafael Devers, who seemed to, and I'll say seemed, but he seemed to sulk when the Red Sox signed Alex Bregman. He seemed to be unprepared for the start of the season, to me. And I don't think that reflects well on his commitment to winning and his leadership in that organization. Contrast that to Aaron Judge. What a leader Aaron Judge is. Incredible consistency and results, and even-keeled approach to preparation, to interviews, to media. Aaron Judge does so many things well. And those are two extremes. And I'm not saying Devers is going to be like this forever. But Vlad Guerrero Jr., as he moves ahead here, he needs to embrace those things that you were talking about. So preparation, talking to rookies, being there for his teammates, being there for the media, accepting that those challenges are going to come. I think that all of that has to be a priority for him, and people are going to look to him for that. So that's something that he's really going to have to gradually shift into more of a role on. It's not going to be a one-day thing, but in the course of, you know, this 14-year deal, he's going to have a huge impact on, you know, to use a Blue Jays word, on the culture of this team. So the more he can push things forward, it's way better if he's showing up at the next free agent recruitment. Chad Green, you sit this one out, you stay at home. Vlad Jr.'s on the plane to Toronto to try to recruit Murakami, whoever it is. Like, that's the sort of thing that he can do to nudge this thing even further forward for the organization.
Yeah, his level of ownership and accountability of his career and of the success of the team, the organization, has to be the highest of the high. And it needs to be higher than the level of focus that we saw when he got picked off at second base in the postseason. Yeah. the professionalism standard has to be higher than when he showed up for summer camp in 2020 out of shape and couldn't play his position in the field.
Instagram, don't like posts of yourself and other teams' jerseys. Seriously.
Yeah. 100%.
I'm not trying to pile on Vlad Jr. because, you know, I hope no one looks through my Instagram likes from when I was 26 years old. But I just think that, you know, end of the day, you've got to step forward into as much maturity as you can handle and accept that he's not going to be perfect. Obviously, no one's perfect. But if he can do more on that front, then you're talking about such an amazing talent on the field and a guy who loves baseball and a guy who does try his best. And I think, you know, I think his heart's in the right place. And so with a little bit more experience, I think he's fully capable of stepping into that and doing a good job.
I point to the Bryce Harper example again. Like, this is somebody who was on the cover of Sports Illustrated when he was 17, before he was even drafted, being compared to LeBron James. Sports Illustrated is a magazine. You can go find it in a museum somewhere. It's this printed product that came off of this thing called the printing press. And then early in his years in MLB, he was inconsistent, as we've mentioned, production-wise. He would visibly pout when things didn't go his way. He had on-field confrontations with umpires, with opponents. I mean, he showed a lot of immaturity in his early years in baseball, just as Vlad has. But when Bryce reached like the stage that Vlad's at now, you know, age 26 season, it flipped and it switched. And you look at the leader that he has been in Philadelphia and with the Phillies, you look at the way that he is revered there in their organization and their clubhouse, amongst their fan base. You look at the standard that he has set and that he has held himself to. Like, this is somebody who I've interviewed on the field in the postseason following games in Philadelphia, and like the intensity, the professionalism, like just the presence, the leadership that he exudes in those moments, like you can feel it standing next to him and you can see it on TV, and it is an everyday thing around the clock, on season, off season, etc. Like, that's what Vlad has to become now, because he is entering that stage of the career that Harper entered when everything changed.
Yeah, that would be huge. If Vlad Jr. can get to that point, that would be massive. And to be fair, I do think that Vlad Jr. has some things already figured out. His conditioning is already so much better than it was in 2020. Even behind the scenes, he's described to me as someone who, you know, on a standard night, he might go play some video games and drink like an electrolyte drink. And, you know, that's maybe, you know, have a post-game snack. That's great. Like, if that's where things are for him, that is such a good spot. And I'm not expecting perfection from anyone, including Vlad Jr. 14 years is way too long to be perfect. So I would expect some sort of, you know, stumbles in some respects in the course of this contract. But this is another part of it. There is a leadership component to this, no doubt.
I mean, how much caffeine's in that electrolyte drink and what time of day? I mean, let's just be serious here, all right? I mean, this is going to affect your sleep, your circadian rhythms, like added sugars, what proportion of your daily calories. I mean, come on, man. Hold yourself to a higher standard. I'm kidding. That is all I have as well. I couldn't imagine saying anything else about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Let's step away. And when we come back, we're going to very quickly touch on what's actually happening on the field with the Toronto Blue Jays, all that and so much more when we continue on At The Letters. It continues on At The Letters, presented by MLB The Show 25. Arden Zwelling, Bennickson Smith, our producer, is Christian Ryan. It is time now for the decision of the week, presented by MLB The Show 25. How will your journey evolve? And Ben, there has been quite a bit of spotlight on some of the bullpen decision-making, some of the late-game maneuvering of John Schneider, Pete Walker, the Blue Jays coaching staff, particularly during the series sweep against the Mets in New York, which just completed over the weekend. And I can think of a couple of instances. It started right in the opener with Kevin Gausman, who was cruising right along. He allowed, only two runs. He's into the sixth. Pitch count was not exceptionally high. It's at 87 pitches, but he's third trip through. He's about to face Juan Soto, who has absolutely owned him in his career. He's just walked a batter on four pitches, and in comes Mason Fluharty for the second appearance of his big league career. Two pitches later, bang, double. Then an intentional walk of Pete Alonso, and bang,
double to Brandon Nimmo, and that's how Mason Fluharty's second outing of his big league career goes. And then there were other ones later on, you know, Chris Bassett coming out of his start for Jimmy Garcia, and then things being turned over to Brendan Little and not going well. Jesse Winker triple, scores a couple, et cetera, et cetera. What have you made of some of the bullpen decision making that we've seen so far from the Blue Jays?
Yeah, don't love the one you just outlined. I think at that point in the season when your bullpen has been taxed, I think it makes more sense to stick with Gausman, even if you're losing the platoon advantage. And even though Gausman didn't have a ton of swing and miss in that game, I would take his veteran pitchability and savvy over Mason Fluharty and just opening the doors to the bullpen and using guys and taxing guys at that point. Now, look, is that a 90-10 obvious decision? I would say no. I would say that's probably more of a, you know, 60-40, where I tilt to the side of letting Gausman stick that one out instead of going to the rookie. But it clearly didn't work. And I think it also underscores a broader point here with the Blue Jays bullpen, which is, and you could apply this to their whole pitching staff, which is there is some weakness at the end. There's some vulnerability there, whether it's Fluharty, whether it's Jacob Barnes, whether it's Easton Lucas, who we're likely going to see in Fenway Park this week. There's just some guys there, and they're not unique in this. There are a lot of teams that, you know, look at the Brewers. They're trying to trade for Quinn Priester on the fly and make it up as they go. They're not alone in this, but the Blue Jays really don't have stability at the back end of those options. And that's where I would have said, just stick with Gausman a little longer, because better to go to him than your seventh reliever who couldn't even make the team at a spring training.
Here's the thing, like in that spot, it's the bottom of the sixth. Gausman's going through the order a third time. He's just walked Lindor on four pitches. He's about to face a lefty in Juan Soto, who is literally the best hitter on the planet. Like quite literally the best hitter in the game, who also owns Kevin Gausman, like 8-for-17 in his career. He's hit .471 off Gausman with a .690 OBP. So a third time against the best hitter on the planet, who has a .700 on base against that particular pitcher, who, as you mentioned, didn't have a strikeout in the game and hadn't had swing and miss stuff all night. I think bringing in a lefty in that spot is an obvious decision to make. The problem for the Blue Jays is the two options that they had were Brendan Little and Mason Fluharty. And Brendan Little, as we talked about last time on the podcast, had appeared in four of the first seven games of the season. And this is now game number eight. Like, that is a 92-93 game pace. Like, the Blue Jays are going to burn out Brendan Little really quickly if they keep up the usage that they've had with him. And they're also behind. So you really want to preserve Little for the moments when you're ahead and protecting a lead. So you go to your second option as a lefty, and that just so happens to be someone who's making their second appearance in the big leagues. So it's really an issue of personnel. Like, it's an issue of a lack of viable alternatives. Like, it's an issue of beyond Hoffman, Garcia, and like, there's been some questions about Chad Green's performance to this point, and Nick Sandlin has been a little bit hot and cold. So really, beyond Hoffman, Garcia, there just aren't that many guys that you can really, really trust in this bullpen. So I don't think that, like, the circumstances of the move, I don't think making the move was the wrong call. Yeah. I think that, like, John Schneider and Pete Walker just went to the options that they had, and the options right now just aren't good enough.
Well, did you say 8-for-17 Soto?
Yes.
Against, yeah, I mean, yeah. So I can't sit here and hate on the decision and that. I really
with,
can't.
By the way, yeah. With 12 walks.
Yeah.
8-for-17 with 12 walks.
I can't sit here and say it's a bad. I guess the bigger point then is there was no good decision to be made. And sometimes that's what happens, because you have to face Juan Soto and Aaron Judge and Mike Trout and the best hitters in the game. So sometimes there's not really a good decision to be made. And in this case, I would say they were choosing between bad ones, bad choices, because Gausman against Soto, that's a rough choice. You don't want to choose that. Fluharty, second major league game on the road. Soto, yeah, that's not great. Little, as you said, had been used a lot. Sandlin, I mean, technically reverse splits, but yeah, good luck. I don't think that's going to work out too well. So they just didn't have a good choice. The decision of the week was they had all bad decisions.
And even like the players who otherwise would have been in those spots to begin the season, whether it's Richard Lovelady or Ryan Yarbrough, like, let me know how much confidence you would have in those guys coming in to face Juan Soto in that spot.
Right. And yeah, Lovelady, no shot. I mean, Yarbrough, I think he actually had a really good outing with the Yankees. And I continue to believe that there'd be room for him on this staff. But this is the Vlad Jr. podcast. This is not the Ryan Yarbrough podcast. So I won't bore people too much with my takes there. But yeah, I think that, you know, between Fluharty, Barnes, Easton, Lucas, those are spots that in the course of the season, we're probably going to see some churn. They're probably going to be looking for solutions on the go in those last couple of bullpen spots in that final rotation spot. And ideal world, something emerges. If not, you get to the deadline, you're looking to upgrade in those spots. And not to sidetrack us entirely here, but and to potentially upgrade other spots, whether it's a Davis Schneider, right-handed bat, whether it's a Nathan Lucas, you got to be looking, because improving the bottom of the roster is often a lot easier and more effective than improving the top.
Ryan Yarbrough has had a couple of good outings for the Yankees. He's also had an outing when he entered with a massive 6-run lead and went walk, walk, single, Geraldo Perdomo, grand slam. So things can go in two very different directions with Ryan Yarbrough. Like, we are talking about the guy who, like, literally has the slowest fastball in baseball.
Right. And his ERA is 9.82. So I guess I shouldn't put him on too much of a pedestal here.
Still not a great matchup against Juan Soto. Like, this just gets back to the fact that, like, the Blue Jays right now, like, just do not have a good enough team to win the American League East, and will not have a good enough bullpen to contend in the postseason if they should get there. So, to your point, like, if the Blue Jays are adding at the deadline, high leverage relievers with velo, with swing and miss, have to be a primary target.
Yep, absolutely. And really, that's going to be an ongoing search, and the pro scouting, I mean, they're probably not deploying their scouts to, you know, ballparks with quite the same ferocity that they will be in July. But never too early to keep an eye on who might be available for that kind of upgrade, because if they are contending and if this season does go in the way that they hope, they will certainly be looking for pitching.
Decision of the Week was brought to you by MLB The Show 25.
Called out on strikes his first time up. Now a ball in the air to left, hit pretty well, returns, and it's gone. It is the first home run of the season for George Springer, and it's a 2-0 lead for the Blue Jays.
All right, Ben, let's end here. Last time we discussed, we were talking about the need for the Blue Jays to hit for more power. They were playing well enough. Like, they were 5-2 on the homestand. They were winning games, but we suggested that it was unlikely they were going to continue winning games if they're only going to be hitting singles and walking and bunting runners over and small balling their way to success. Lo and behold, they go to Citi Field against the Mets and hit zero homers, get swept, now tied with the Kansas City Royals and Tampa Bay Rays for fewest home runs hit this year by a club at 5, and the Blue Jays have played one more game than the Royals and Rays. How much of a concern is this? Are home runs fluky, luck-based? Do they come in bunches? Is this likely to correct in a big way? Or do you have grander long-term concerns about the lack of power from the Blue Jays?
I would say, honestly, like, scale of 1 to 10, where, you know, Max Scherzer's injury is like a 7 or 8, I would say their lack of home runs is like a 4 for me right now. Obviously, if we're looking at it in a descriptive sense, yes, that's been a massive contributor to why they didn't win against the Mets and why they were swept. That, you know, looking back, it's very easy to say that. Looking forward, I still think you've got Vlad, you've got Bo, you've got Santander. Those guys are going to hit dingers.
The payoff pitch. Hit well left center field.
You've got some other players who are more in the we'll see category, whether it's Jimenez, Springer, Ernie Clement, Roden. You know, they're guys that maybe they hit you 5, maybe they hit you 20. You know, there's some variance there as far as what to expect. But I think this group as a whole should be fine for hitting home runs. And maybe this is a, you know, old takes exposed waiting to happen. But I honestly, it's not a deep concern to me at this point. What about you?
I'm going to wait to see how things go at Fenway. You know, Fenway is a place where the Blue Jays have hit a bunch of homers. It's a place where Bo and Vlad have performed very well in their careers. Then they're going to go to Camden, where obviously like Anthony Santander has hit a whole bunch of homers there. So I have an eye on this, and particularly it's on the 1-3 in the batting order, because I'm not expecting like an Andrés Giménez or an Alejandro Kirk to carry the power load for this team. Certainly not a Will Wagner or an Ernie Clement or an Alan Rodon. Like, it really has to come from those top three. Those top three have to hit the bulk of homers for this club. And really, like, production from the top three in the batting order has been, power production in particular, has been why the Blue Jays offense has struggled the last couple of years. Like, if you look at 2021 and 2022, those 2 years from the Blue Jays, the top three in their batting order were second in the league in slugging percentage and first in home runs per plate appearance. Last 2 years, 23 and 24, 18th in slugging percentage, 14th in home runs per plate appearance. So they go from leading the league to middle of the pack in home runs per plate appearance and below average in slugging percentage. So far this year, zero home runs per plate appearance from the top three in the batting order. That is obviously dead last in baseball, and a 308 slug from the top three in the batting order, which is 29th in baseball. Early days, we are, you know, barely 6 or 7% into the season. But I mean, this is a reason why the Blue Jays offense struggled the last couple of years, because they just did not get slug from the top three in the batting order. And you look around baseball, the best teams are getting power production from their top three. So Bo Bichette, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Anthony Santander, a lot of pressure on them to start swinging the bats for power and adding some thump going forward.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's a huge, you know, just driver of offense, driver of wins, losses. Obviously, literally the best thing you can possibly do as a hitter is to hit a home run. So if you're not doing that, you have to do so many other things and piece it together. And the Jays did do that for a while with the singles and the small ball, especially against the Nationals. They did a lot of little things well, but it's so much easier and simpler just to do one or two big things. And I think they're capable of it. So I am not calling this one a crisis by any stretch.
We'll see how our tune may change after four in Boston and three in Camden this weekend, which you and I will be present for. Fingers crossed for good weather, my friend. And I'll see you there, unless you have anything else to add.
That is it. Looking forward to it. Hopefully Baltimore has some good baseball and some good weather to offer. And yeah, in the meantime, looking forward to this Fenway series and potential announcement of a certain first baseman in his contract.
Yeah, I feel like you're not going to actually get bells, whistles, announcement, any of that stuff until the Jays are back in Toronto. So
yes,
this is it's going to be a week of this just being sort of sourced reports before the Blue Jays go on their social media blitz.
Yeah, I could see it being when the Blue Jays are back home on Monday the 14th. It would be, that could be a date to circle.
Yes, indeed. He's Ben Nicholson Smith. I'm Arden Zwelling. Our producer is Christian Ryan. I want to thank all of you for listening. As always, this has been At the Letters, presented by MLB The Show 25.